I feel like Rob's being asked on for one reason, and it's just to remember the podcast.
Just to, like, literally just keep track of shit. He's like an underpaid accountant who's not really dealing with money.
Mm. At least dress up as a vampire, be Count Von Count.
Sure, wear whatever the fuck you want in the show, man. If it's entertaining enough, I might even consider doing a video version.
Don't yuck other people's yums. That's all I can say.
Player 2 Pizzacast episode 182. I am your host, Tim Henderson, and I am very good at remembering number orders. That was definitely me. I knew that without having to ask anybody at all. Any questions? Definitely did not need to alt-tab. No, I cannot count. I cannot hold stuff in my head, I guess. Also, I mean, Rob, you're here because you remembered the number. But who knows? Yeah. Like, you probably remember that from the email I sent. Like, I may have gotten the email wrong.
No, I remember that I can remember from the email, but I remember that 181 was the last episode, so 2 + 2
see
is 4.
How good this guy is?
That's why he gets paid the big bucks.
The big bucks, otherwise known as the retro movie keys.
Yeah, as many games as I can give him. That's all I can do.
Also, yes, that other voice returning after a little bit of a hiatus.
It's been a while.
Then, you know, yeah, it has. Been fully back on brand, sipping rum.
Hmm. Yeah, I'm sipping rum as a painkiller. I got absolutely wiped out at surfing this morning, and I'm old now, and that shit takes a long time to recover from these days.
You said you got wiped out at surfing and you're drinking alcohol as a painkiller. You did not sound old yet. It's only when you actually...
Oh, and look, it's rum and Nurofen, you know. So...
Well, take the Nurofen out of the equation. Like, it sounds very piratey, actually. It's like, my painkiller. There's ocean, I got hurt. Rum. How am I going to cope with it?
Rum.
Just sugarcane spirits.
Yes.
So I guess you still had to travel a little bit to the beach. I mean, Canberra's kind of inland.
Yeah, we're at the coast for Easter at my in-laws, so... Best way to avoid the in-laws is go to the beach.
I mean, I can see benefits of that. Also, like, it's my handy little segue to say that we are basically talking about traveling this episode. I'll do, like, just the, you know, our favorite games or what makes a good game for traveling, be that travel, you know, short or long or just staying somewhere else. But, you know, before that, you can actually, you know, just discuss actual games themselves, which I guess we're going to do. And Rob, I should really take better notes. I did this myself, though. This is very much intentional. All I've written down for you is, like, not actually Desert Strike.
Yeah, so I've been playing Cleared Hot, which is, like, you know, you might say Desert Strike at home, but it's actually really good. Like, I've only just started playing. It's been on the list for a while. I think I had it on the list of anticipated games, like, last year, I think. So I've been looking forward to a while, and it's like, it's currently in early access. It's like the first of three chapters. But yeah, so it takes that isometric, you fly helicopter, you undertake missions thing. And it starts off being very much like a homage in the first mission, which is like a flashback to your final mission in the army in the Gulf War, which ends up that you're assigned to like take out a couple of communications towers and you're supposed to go back to base, but it like, one of your buddies is like behind enemy lines and in trouble. You have to go rescue, you know, disobey your boss and try to rescue him, but you get shot down by a jet. And it's like, then you get bumped out of the army and it's 30 years later in the present day. And it's like, it's one of the things I really like about it is there's a bit of humor in the writing. So it's not like, it's not dry like Desert Strike and it's not, you know, racist characters.
I accidentally came across reviews of Desert Strike for, was it the Atari or the Amiga? And it was like just racist subheads in like some of the review text as well.
Yeah. So that's really good. But like the first chapter is like in you know, backwater Texas. So you're dealing with like the first mission is you've got a new chopper and you have to do stuff like MMO fetch quest and recover this dude's chickens and bring him back to the coop. And because the one big thing that Cleared Hot does over Desert Strike is that, so remember Desert Strike, you had the little windshield come out of your helicopter when you flew over a pickup or a person to rescue. Here in Cleared Hot, you actually manually trigger it. It's bound to like Y or triangle if you're playing with a PlayStation pad. And what's great is you don't just use it to pick up like weapons or fuel or health or whatever, or people. But you could also pick up objects. So like you could pick up, there's one mission where you have to pick up a fuel tank and deliver it to a junkyard. And then you have to pick up a new fuel tank and drop it back where the old one used to be. And while you're doing this, while you're flying low, so you've got to be careful that you don't blow it up. And it's sort of great because there's another mission that I did where your friend's like junk scrapyard is being attacked by like these militia thugs, and you don't have weapons on the helicopter yet. So what you have to do is like pick up. You could pick up the militia grunts and throw them about, or you could pick up like rocks off the ground and try to drop it on them. And so there's all of that stuff, which is really fun. So there's a bit of emergent gameplay in there. But a few missions after that, you do start getting weapons, and there's a whole bunch of like, each mission you get paid a certain amount to do. So like one was, there were some oil fields that the militia guys had taken over, and you have to destroy a bunch of storage tanks that they're filling up with fuel to steal, but also rescue like the engineers from the fuel company. So you have to rescue them, bring them back to base, and you get health and weapon pickups from them. But along the way, you also find money pickups will give you bonus cash alongside the money that you get paid for doing a mission. And this will eventually go to, like, between missions, you can buy new weapons for the chopper. I believe buy new choppers as well, because they talk about there's, like, 8 helicopters you can fly, and one of them is, like, a homage to Airwolf.
Oh, nice.
So I thought that was cool. But, like, the others are all, like, real-world military helicopters of various kinds. Like, you fly the Apache in the flashback mission, and there's a bunch of others, but it's like, yeah, they added Elf. I guess they knew that you had to have a tribute to that. I do want to unlock that, but yeah, it's like, it's twin stick, it's pretty lightweight, it runs a dream on my potato rig from 10 years ago, and it's all certified for deck, so I imagine it'll be good on
handheld PCs in general, at least.
Yeah, it'll be good on those. Yeah, it's like basically controls are really straightforward. It's like twin stick, left stick moves, right stick rotates. Then it's like right trigger is your main gun, left trigger is your missiles, and then you've got a button for the winch. It's really good to control. It runs really well. I'm really enjoying it so far. I'm like halfway through that first chapter thereabouts. It's like 10 or so missions. And then the other two chapters that are coming, they're in different biomes. So it's like one's going to be a jungle and the other's in the Arctic apparently. So yeah, it's pretty good. You know, it's being published by Microprose, which is definitely a sign of quality with it. I'm really having
especially
fun
in that sort of that sort of genre. It seems like that's like Microprose's kind of ballpark, really. Is
yeah. So yeah, it's shaping up really well. I've been enjoying the release so far. It's really tight for early access. I definitely want to continue working through it, and hopefully it won't be too long for the rest of the other two locales and missions to drop, so I can work my way through it. But definitely, if you have an itch for that, I think it's definitely well worth checking out. I think I'm sticking with this a little more than there was another one called Megacopter that came out a year or so ago that was a similar style of thing, but it was very more stylized, very weird kind of sci-fi angle. And that was cool, but I don't know, it didn't stick with me as well as this is so far.
I'm excited to hear that apparently not actually Jungle Strike is going to get added to it.
James, there's not actually Urban Strike.
Urban Strike, yeah.
I guess the Arctic might be not quite Soviet Strike.
Yeah, I mean, it could be Russia.
Yeah.
I have very weird memories of those original games. I never actually played them, but I was very, very aware of them. Because I had an image cool about them, so I had to pretend I knew what I was talking about.
Yeah, I played I remember playing the third on a Mega Drive at like a Kmart, like the demo kiosk, and playing the first on a relative's Amiga. But that's about it back in the day, my experience with them.
I played Jungle Strike on a SNES emulator, I believe.
that was actually on PC. I'm surprised you didn't get the PC version.
Everything you said would have played in that time would have been in some capacity on a PC.
On a PC, yeah.
And boy, the 16-bit consoles got emulated really well, really quickly in the scheme of things.
They certainly did.
Although, yeah, so you are no longer playing emulators.
No, I'm not.
You're playing Roblox, all sorts of
legally acquired games. I'm playing Morbid Metal, which is about to hit early access. It will hit
early access the day this episode goes live, probably, yeah, actually.
It will. And it is an interesting kind of from the it's a indie game. One main developer, obviously he's got help, but one main guy. And it's being published by Ubisoft of all people, which is
it
seems like a flashback to the days when Ubisoft used to take chances on things, and which is cool. I like it. So this, the best way to describe it is Devil May roguelike, because
it doesn't sound bad. Terrible.
You know what it is?
No,
it, and that's it. And so really, if you immediately thought of Devil May Cry combat with a roguelike, that's exactly what it is. You get, three robot shells that you can switch between on the fly. Each has two special moves that are built on timers, so you can switch and chain special moves by switching on the fly and keep the combo going. You've got S ranks, you've got, you know, combat rate, all those things that you expect from a Devil May Cry game. There's obviously a very futuristic sci-fi matrixy kind of vibe to this. I feel like the story is slowly unraveling, as a good roguelike does, as you progress. And it feels like you've kind of been injected into a computer somehow, and you're taking control of these robot shells that each have different, you know, abilities and things. So one's really fast, one's good at area control, and one hits slow and hard, you know, and you can switch between the two, use it against enemies appropriately, and all those sort of things. So there's a lot happening on the fly, but it's quite well. The controls are really well designed.
That's a big one, because when you say Metal May Cry Devil, I think,
Devil May.
You know what happened to my mouth then?
Yeah.
Devil May Cry. Like, you do have, like, you know, the Japanese character action games. One thing they obviously do a lot better than most is they dial those in.
They dial those combos in. And look, it is early access. It hasn't even hit early access yet. And at the present, I would say 90% is well balanced, which is, it's really cool. Like, and I feel like in this sort of game, playtesting with a wide public is going to do wonders for it, right? Because they'll be able to see those really good players that, you know, that love this sort of game and really be able to dial in the balance of things. But at the moment, it feels really well designed. I think the timings on dodges and things like that are super rewarding. So if you get a dodge in right, you get this window where you can do a counter, kind of like Bayonetta, where it slows. And
it sounds
cool,
very witch timey.
Yeah, yeah. It's not quite the same. It's just like it pauses for a second. You get a second to hit your attack button in that second, and you'll do like a pre-canned move that will come back at them. But I'm really enjoying it. It's cool, a really good looking game, and I think that's the advantage of a roguelike, right? They can do some set assets that look exceptional and just,
well, you're not making it an open world, it helps. You kind of,
yeah, it's, you can mix and match those assets in smart ways to make it feel fresh each run. And yeah, I'm pretty positive on it so far. I think the difficulty is, it's hard to say because it's early on, but I think it's about right. It offers the right amount of challenge. You know, you get that little bit further each time. I'm not sure about the persistent upgrades just yet. They feel a little underwhelming. You know, you like those persistent upgrades to give you an immediate feeling of a bit more power. And
like, I imagine it is probably the hardest part to balance, though.
Yeah,
because on one hand, you don't want people to, like, actually do too well.
Straight up.
Straight up, like.
So absolutely a hard thing to do, and I think maybe they're just a tad underwhelming at this point in time, but the amount of roguelikes I've played in early access over the years, almost all of them have their rewards reworked before the final release, so that those persistent upgrades, almost all of them get reworked before the final release. So I wouldn't be surprised if that happens here. But the strong core of combat here is really exciting. I think this could be early access game, it's not expensive. I think this is a really strong showing for people that like their Devil May Cry experience and, you know, aren't sick of roguelikes yet. So
I mean, that is I do understand why indies in particular make them, because it is a very like resource bang for buck in terms of development and how much game and media can make, so long as you pull it off properly.
Yes.
I'm a little worried about the target specs. I mean, like 16 gig of RAM is the minimum. I guess that's fairly normal these days, but like that's the entirety of what a Steam Deck has, including graphics.
Yeah, it works on my ROG Ally fine. On my ROG Ally.
The Ally has more RAM.
Yeah, it does. It does. So it works fine on that. I don't know that it'll work on a Steam Deck.
Because I guess we'll get to later in the half. This does sound like the sort of game that may actually... And I think any roguelike, actually, will probably get into that as the sort of game that benefits.
Yeah. And I think this one, is definitely on the higher end of specs, but also that's something that could be tuned in as the game goes through early access too. I've seen that happen before.
A lot more scalable, I guess.
Yeah.
I
mean, once it's been out on a wider range of systems and the dev gets a bit look at things, they may be able to, you know, save resources here and there to make it work on the Steam Deck, you know. So
yeah, just have a specifically handheld graphic setting or something.
Yeah. Yeah. So I like it. I like it. It's fun. I think there's a lot of promise there. I have played about 5 hours so far. I'm not sure how much content is there just yet in the early access. But the roadmap's supposed to come out in a week or two after the first release, so I guess I'll know soon.
Yeah, and I would presume 5 hours is going to be scratching the surface at least.
Yeah, yeah.
Follows any sort of thing, but
yeah, I'd expect the same.
Yeah, I'm 5 hours in, and I haven't hit the end of early access yet. So, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, you've slightly ruined my segue when I like had it like nicely there, because I haven't been playing any specific game too much focus. My game of the last couple of weeks, I guess, is like being like new ROG LAX, not the Xbox version. So many, both for like ethical and price based reasons. figuring out this hardware, because there was a lot of umming and ahhing in that between that and the Steam Deck, and then the Steam Deck went up $150 in Japan.
Oof.
Assuming a 1-to-1 exchange rate, the yen is still actually quite a bit weaker than the Australian dollar, which is not great.
Yikes, that's almost like, that would mean that you're paying for that mid-tier 512 one, basically. Yeah,
basically, the mid-tier went up to the price that the top tier was.
Mm.
Like, directly just slotted in, and the top tier went up another. I guess to be somewhat fair to Valve, like, it went up in a lot of Asia. It went up the most in Japan. But everywhere else, it went up the equivalent of, like, $10 or $20. And so it means that I think Valve is maybe still eating the RAM cost for the most part. And it really is just the yen being super weak that is what like drove the big, because it's the same price as Australia, actually. Like I did it back to back. It's just the yen has gotten so much weaker that like it became. So it was like between, that, but I ended up with ROG Ally. Like, and I will for always have a kind of like this pro list and the con list, and there is no correct answer between these two machines. It is really annoying. And like in so many ways. But I mean, so big one for the Steam Deck is you just go and like you don't really need to do anything with it. Whereas I've found myself, whether I want to or not, tinkering with this machine quite a bit, like getting settings in, getting Windows updated. Definitely getting it updated, because the first installment was just vanilla Windows 11, which is just a fucking nightmare.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Have almost installed Bazite 2 or 3 times. There are 2 reasons why I haven't yet. And it goes back to the beginning of this week, where one, there was like just a news story that dropped on some random website about like the last big SteamOS web update seeming to be more about making it a nice experience for people without Steam Decks. Made me think, is Valve going to be making a big push soon? Because the main reason I'm talking Bazite instead of SteamOS, and for anybody who doesn't know what the fuck I'm talking about, Bazite is a very SteamOS-like version of Linux that, unlike SteamOS, and this is the big key, can be dual booted. The only reason I'm doing that instead of SteamOS is like I have a lot of free Epic games, and it turns out that the ROG Ally is maybe going to give a whole lot of lease of life to a lot of those things that I've never touched before. So I'm playing one of them quite a bit at the moment. So yeah, in part it's like, okay, is Valve actually going to make a big enough push for SteamOS that they may actually make it so it doesn't want to hog the entire machine, in which case I feel bad because the people working at Bazite have probably worked very, very hard. But the second SteamOS becomes an easy dual boot install option, like it's going to be a no-brainer. It's going to be a no-brainer. It's going to be, I want that one. The other one is,
you can get all that shit running on SteamOS. You can do it. It's fiddly.
I looked into it and I don't want to go through that. It would be easier to dual boot a fucking system.
I did it on mine. And once you've done it once, there are some Linux apps that will make life easier for you to do it. And it's not so hard. It seems confusing, but once you bust through it, it is doable and it works. And you can actually put the icons into the Steam OS so you don't have to switch between the two. So, yeah.
So I'm still going to be at the nervous start page. So the thing about it was I actually started going through with it. I actually deleted most of the games I've installed on Steam. I downloaded Bazite. I downloaded, was it Bala Etcher, whatever software I needed to like flash the USB drive. Then I flashed Bazite onto there and it partitioned the USB stick into two drives. And now I'm like, I don't see anywhere in the tutorial that says it happens. And I don't know if one of these is the wrong thing. I'm going to, I was like, you know what? I'm just going to back out again now. I was like, for anybody installing a new OS for the first time, you need like a crystal clear description of what is happening. Cause I was like, I don't know. But then later that day, I was like, you know, fuck it. Also turned out I just bought a new router, which is nice and faster than my old one. And I was able to re-download everything and more onto Steam within like 40 minutes or something. Now, went to pick my wife up from her work, just sitting outside waiting for her to come down. She went down, she'd forgotten something. But while she came down and forgot something, I think I was just playing Sonic Adventure or something, just very lightweight, on and off again thing. I was like, came down, it's time to go, kind of just flick the power button, put it to sleep. About 2 minutes later, she realized she forgot something, had to go back up. Click the power button again. Windows will just shut itself. Yeah. This is the big thing that keeps on making me want to go back. Like, it's a fucking handheld, and so long as it keeps on shitting itself on sleep mode, I cannot use it for short train rides.
Yeah. And it is a well-known problem with it. I must say the Xbox Ally X is much better at it, and it seems to be that the Xbox Ally X is being used as the test bed for improvements, and they get it there, and then they filter it down. So I would suggest that...
If they can fix that, then I may be able to live without actually putting Linux on there. Like, that's a big thing, even more so than, like, the little bit of extra performance or whatever. It's like, just let me put the thing... Just because it's a handheld, like, if I want to play this thing for 10 minutes, it needs to be able to sleep. That said, though, otherwise the thing is, like, actually really, really great. I've found that once I like got into all the settings and the tweaking, it's like, okay, that's actually pretty nice. I wish you could adjust the lights on the sticks by more than 30% intervals without going into Windows proper.
Yeah.
One, because I don't want to go into Windows proper. Two, when I was doing it through Windows proper, it would just forget all the time. Like every 2 days, the lights were just going back to full on 100%. So I was like, you know what? Like a 10% glow is kind of nice. Like just a solid color for me. Just a faint glow. I've just turned them off now because the least I can do on the Armoury Create software is 33. And that's just too bright. My favorite purchase for this so far, aside from the carry case, which I guess has stopped it from breaking, is went down a rabbit hole and very, very quickly, especially now that I have it again, try a new router, went and purchased PX Play. And I have a nodding from Huso, which maybe he knows what I'm talking about.
Is that the alternate PS remote play?
So, yes, and more of, I guess at this point, more of an alternative to Chiaki. I was assuming I was just going to I'm going to install Chiaki, and I did some research, and it seemed like PX Play is a bit more stable, like a little bit faster. You do have to, but it's like $20. Like, you have to pay for it, but you know what? I will pay $20 for a decent piece of software. And it actually just works really well once you get it set up. Like, shockingly well. Like, not perfect, it's like, you know, it works how, like, a MP3 would sound through. It's like playing listening to music on an MP3 through wireless headphones versus, you know, having a really good stereo setup playing from an actual CD.
Yeah.
But transformative is like, it's like I literally just play my PS5 in bed now.
It basically just switches it to what are the PS, whatever that
portal,
PS
it just turns it into a portal.
Portal. Yep. That's it.
It makes, there's like no reason to buy a portal anymore. It's like, this thing, I guess, costs about three times as much as a portal did, but it does so much more. And it also does the portal thing.
Yeah.
Pretty well. From what I've actually been reading, it may actually do it like slightly better. Like I'm getting a pretty clean 1080p coming through this thing. It's got like frame rate limiters and stuff built in, which it doesn't actually need because it's also a system level one.
And all those things are so dependent on your network. So, I mean,
yeah.
spending $20 to see if something works is way more appealing than whatever the portal costs these days.
Yeah. There's actually a free demo version. The only downside there is you actually need to reinstall it. It's not so refined that you just pay the money and it automatically. But
it's a bummer.
It is a bummer, but, and I was kind of annoyed by that because there was a whole lot of faffing around, like signing into the PSN on the PC, and then it wasn't letting me because, like, Sony's website is buggy or whatever. But this was a pleasant surprise. Like, when I did, like, you know, install the new one, it actually just carried over the memory of the linked PS5 already.
Yeah, cool.
So I was like, all right, you know, not too bad. And now it's there, installed it. I was able to put the icon into the armory crate.
Yep.
And yeah, man, that thing is excellent. That is a great functionality to have. We'll get to this in the topic, but like, I am now wondering, like, if I am staying in a hotel or somewhere with like a really solid internet connection, like, is this going to be a viable option to keep on playing?
I don't see why not. Paul uses the portal on remote trips and stuff, as long as he's got the network connection. So
yeah, it's wild. It's like, wow, I can play games that look really, really pretty on this. Like, I was kind of impressed with like how it could get games looking natively, but man, like, pretty clean. Like, not going to replace owning hardware anytime particularly soon. But like I say, it's like going from having a good stereo system or CD player with a quality headphones to like MP3s and wireless headphones. It's not quite as, it will still do the fucking job if you need it to without too many complaints.
Yeah.
So yeah, that is my like just easy recommendation to anybody with any of these handheld systems, or I guess even a laptop if you have a spare controller lying around and you go to a good work internet connection and an hour lunch break. Like, I download the demo, I think it's worth $20 easy.
Yep.
Yeah, and with that, I guess we'll take our own little short little break. Probably not stream any games, because, you know, we have to record the second half of the show. Focusing more on this travel thing. We're back, the Player 2 Bizcast, the Funky Bogans, whatever we've... I mean, plus side, I don't think any of us are Bogans. Minus side, I don't think any of us are funky either, so... very misleading.
It's probably fair. It's probably a fair description.
Yeah.
Yep.
I don't know about a whole lot of funk metal, so... It's probably something out there, actually, now that I've said that out loud, but...
Oh, I'm sure there is.
Yeah, and we're not focusing on music games, though. I need to find a way to like move myself along to where we are at, which is, you know, Huso and I at least have been just finding our lives existing in car seats and airplanes and trains and stuff in like the last year or so. So we figured, you know what, especially since it feels like a lot of where the money is in the industry is these days is just like portability, maybe we should just take some time to like talk about the best travel games and like what makes a good travel game and also under which circumstances, because... As I said up front, like, there's, you know, commuting to work 20 minutes in the bus. There is visiting relatives and just being stuck in their house for a week or two. And then there's, you know, flying all the way to Europe, probably via Asia at the moment to keep things safe.
Yep. We're avoiding the Middle East at the moment. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, the world sucks. And yeah, but whatever. In all of these cases, you know, you're probably not, I doubt Huso's bringing his whole PC rig with him. And I'm probably not bringing mine or a PlayStation 5 or anything with me either. So
I get funny looks when I bring my 29-inch ultra-wide monitor on the plane. People look at you weird, so I stop doing it, you know.
I definitely want to say as a kid, like if we were driving to visit our cousins or something in a different state, I'd probably try and bring a Sega console along. I don't know if my parents.
Oh, yeah. Consoles are easy.
I think visiting grandparents in the Buckeyheads, we've got to bring the Mega Drive down once.
Yep.
Didn't do a whole lot of good while we're in the car, though.
No.
So maybe we'll just like work our way up and like start with like commute stuff and then like get to the bigger trips and like the staying away.
Fair.
I'm going to start with you, Rob, because I feel like I'm going to most likely get the Game Boy or possibly Atari Lynx.
I would say for me, the big one was PSP. That was the one where it clicked.
Yeah.
Because like I had a like, so I had a I bought myself a GBA during my final year of uni. But there were good games on the GBA, but you didn't really have just the ability to just put it to sleep. You had to always shut it down. And so some games like Advance Wars, which was the game I bought it for, were great to being able to save at any point and do that. But it was really on the PSP, which I was frequently commuting like 40-odd minutes from where I am into the Melbourne CBD.
This was a game changer at the time. You're right. Like,
yeah. So, like, for me, the stuff that I really enjoyed playing was stuff where I could get, like multiple 10, 20-minute sessions. Like, Wipeout Pure and Burnout Legends were the main things I'd play on the go because they were just perfect. Those races were, like, 5 minutes or so, get a few races done, put it to sleep, throw it back in my bag when I got off the train, and that was perfect, you know.
Yeah, actually, once we got hardware that could do decent standby 3D handheld like racing games actually did become, especially arcade races, did become an excellent commute option. For me, it was Ridge Racer 2 on the PSP.
Yeah, Ridge Racer as well, and the second one, Bartweb, are easily part of that category as well. That was sort of the prime thing for me. I mean, after that, there were plenty other things, and like the 3DS did a lot of that stuff better than the DS did. And the Vita pretty much just iterated on what the PSP did and rolling from those onto Switch. That was a lot of what I was carrying like over the years when I was having to commute into the office before, you know, pre-pandemic time.
The Switch does bring about a point, and this is partly to be blamed on smartphones as well. Like, remember that couple of years where it seemed like we could see some really interesting creative games on smartphones and then they all just turned into slop effectively?
Yep.
That's a bit harsh. There are probably still some pretty good games being made, but like overwhelmingly...
The vast majority tends to be the gacha.
Yeah.
But like the Vita was still in a slipcase, at least sizable enough to fit into like a jacket pocket at the very least. And there's a big line that gets drawn when all of a sudden the Switch has to go in a bag.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
I literally earlier today, my brain is fine. Thanks. Went into Kyoto and there weren't any seats available. So I had my Switch with me and I just couldn't play it. If it was a PSP, probably could have.
Yep. I mean, I will say this. The PSP Go was an absolute failure of a hardware revision. But when I got one cheap when they were being discontinued, it was great because it was
pretty good idea, poorly messaged. Like, everybody had this idea. It's like, why would I upgrade to that? And I'm going, I don't think it's supposed to be upgraded to. This just seems like an alternate option. Like,
yeah.
Why does everybody think they need to buy every iteration of the console? Like,
that was it. Like, it was great. The one problem with it was that if you had a library, a decent UMD library, you couldn't do jack with it.
Yeah.
Right? At least in Japan, they had the service where you could, like, dump your, you could authorize, you could do whatever with your UMDs and then get the digital download. Like, that was what sold me. It was being discontinued and having, like, when it happened, they did like 10 games bundled with it. And a bunch of those I had on UMD, so I had them digital, and it was great.
Yep.
We'll say with the PSP, though, like you do have to be a little careful, because the best game on that system came out very, very, very early in the system's life, which is Luminous, and that is still to date the only game where I've just completely missed my bus stop and ended up at the end of the line, like late at night, in like South London.
I mean, yeah, it's definitely one of the goats on that system, absolutely.
But you do bring a point. It's like before PSP and DS, like there was no sleep.
Nope.
And that definitely for me, I think definitely like opened RPGs, especially like the PS1 games all of a sudden. Which one of the like
Oh, yeah.
I replayed Final Fantasy VII on the Vita, and it would not have been plausible had it not been like, all right, bus stop, sleep, pick it up again after work. And turn-based RPGs, in particular, I had this written down somewhere, actually, are very good as a travel game.
Oh, absolutely. One of my favorites at the moment is Sea of Stars, which is, for all intents and purposes, a 16-bit turn-based JRPG, and it's awesome. It's really good, and it's perfectly suited for that handheld format. It really is. Because I guess those games, you learn the systems, and they're not really hard to get back into in short doses, whereas some games you kind of need to get into the flow of it. You need to, you know, spend 10, 15 minutes.
You need to sink into the thing.
Yeah, whereas that turn-based RPG sort of thing, you kind of, okay, this is how it works. I'm in.
Also, and I think this matters more than I want it to, is the quality of the buttons on your controller matter here a little bit as well. And frankly, I don't mind the Switch's Joy-Cons. But also, the Pro Controller is a lot nicer.
Yep. And the 3DS was a lot nicer. Like a 3DS XL was much nicer than a Switch.
The Joy-Cons, especially the joysticks themselves, are not great. I don't like them.
I mean, they're
I really don't like them.
They do the job.
Yeah, that's all you can say about them.
They make playing games harder a lot of the time.
I don't feel like you've got
control. Again, turn-based, it doesn't matter nearly as much.
No.
But also, like, a certain degree of paranoia, I've realized, like, it looks like maybe one of my DualSense controllers is starting to get drift again.
Ooh.
Which is not great, and that's an expensive replacement. But if it happens on my ROG Ally, it's like, that's like the entire machine. Like, that's not fixable. Like, the whole thing's bust.
Although I have heard no reports of that yet.
Yeah, I've heard no reports as well, but like it's one of those things is like I want to be a little bit more careful with this because if that does break it.
Yeah.
Like there's the only handheld PC where that would not be necessarily game over would be the Legion Go.
Yeah. Yeah. These things do get troubling when you think about the expense of newer items.
Yeah, controllers have gotten really expensive, but that is a little bit of a digression. Moving into like the long haul, and this has gotten weirdly complicated, so I think you've been flying quite a bit as well.
Yep.
This has been complicated by the simple fact that, you know, people have bought really, and understandably because, you know, people buy the cheap option if it's there, why wouldn't you, have bought cheap power banks, which have since caught fire on airplanes, and now nobody can charge their devices anymore.
Yes, and we're all desperately waiting for airplanes to upgrade their cabs to have 65-watt USB power supplies.
It doesn't need to be 65-watt. It just needs to, like, work. Like, the ones at the moment are so fucking slow.
They are. And look, to be fair on the airlines, it is a process that is happening. I've been on a few of the Qantas planes now that it has upgraded. But, yeah, there's not nearly enough yet. And if you're on a long haul with a ROG or a Steam Deck or, you know, and you want to play a particularly intensive game, then you want to hope it's a short flight.
Already, cause, I mean, I have a pretty long flight coming up at the end of this month, and it's affected two things. One, I bought Octopath Traveler 2 on my Switch 2, Switch 1 game, and that's partly because, okay, enabled by Nintendo doing the thing, which I spoke to Rob about this 2 weeks ago, predicted that finally happened a year later.
Yeah.
Wherein the Switch 2 will now play Switch 1 games docked mode in handheld. So, you know, it doesn't look as blurry. And that's like a weird push and pull for me because it's like, it does actually reduce battery life a little bit. There hasn't been much testing. From what I've seen, you lose like 30, 40 minutes, which is not nothing, definitely. But it's also still better battery life than you'd get from a native Switch 2 game.
Yep.
So that's like a thing that I'm like factoring in there. But it's also when I'm looking at stuff that I've been playing Rise of the Tomb Raider between my PC and ROG Ally at the moment. But like that game is not going to be on the airplane. It doesn't matter how in the zone I am for it. Like that thing, 2 hours and the battery's gone.
Yeah.
No matter how much I optimize it. So I'm like, okay, I'm literally thinking, okay, pixel art. What have we got here?
That is a major concern.
Or like PS360 era stuff, like Portal or something would probably last a while. And it's one of those areas where, really, I don't know what Blackmagic Valve is doing where the Steam Deck OLED just seems to have like this weaker battery, but is the king, like, can last almost 6 hours on Hades, apparently.
It's Linux.
Yeah. It's Linux, yeah.
Linux is just way less bloated.
Part of it is not being Windows, you're right.
Yeah. Look, I get good time out of my, you know, obviously it depends on what you're playing on my Xbox Ally X. But I think that is so dependent on the game you're playing. I would easily get 3 to 4 hours out of that kind of 360, even early Xbox One, PS4 era games. But anything later than that, you're kind of dropping into two hours.
Like you're setting up a 30 frames per second, like, limit.
Or, you know, you're really compromising what you're seeing. That said, I've really found with these trips that I've had where I've either been in the car for an extended period and I have a battery pack, or, you know, I've lucked in the plane. Games that not necessarily are awesome sitting in front of the telly because of repetition, they get a bit dry after a while. They seem to suit the handheld.
Oh, no. Perfectly. I've had a theory for a long time as a reason why certain games hit in Japan, especially when they were like, because Japan was like big on handhelds in a way that the West wasn't, yeah, like in the DS era and whatnot. And I think a part of like games like Dragon Quest are super grindy, but like if you have a population that is commuting by train and they're playing these in 20-minute bursts,
yeah,
it changes the experience. Like,
yeah, yeah. Well, I've been playing Mafia 3. I've been playing Agents of Mayhem. Two games where the core gameplay is fun, but it's excessively repetitive. And that is the biggest problem with both of those games. The core gameplay itself is good, but it's just over and over and over and over and over and over and over again.
You have reminded me of my new king of airplane games, you saw, and I think I spoke to Rob about this at the beginning of the year, because it was after I got back from Australia, is I put Saints Row the Fourth.
Yeah, that's another
on
one.
My Switch, and just kept on playing it. Like, I finished it finally. I started playing that because at first I was like, the intro is kind of funny, and I think that's just what I need right now. This is enough life. And I just kept on playing it. And it was just that loop of like doing stupid shit. And then I could take a mission if I wanted to. And then I could just literally jump and fly around the fucking city.
Yep. And collect some orbs and get the endorphins going by doing simple things. That's the same with Agents of Mayhem. So that's made by Saints Row.
I mean, it's the same team.
So, yeah, same team. It's like repetitive.
Saints Row 3 and 4. Yeah, Saints Row 3 and 4, easy recommendations for flights, though. Like,
yeah.
And, you know, PS3 era stuff, so they're not going to be too hard on your battery.
Yeah, yeah. And they fill up a lot of time without, you know, you don't have to put a lot of brain power into them. And sometimes when you're traveling, putting brain power into a game is not an easy thing to do.
No, like, technically, it's weird that being on an aeroplane is just kind of exhausting.
It is.
I mean, I was flying just a regular ass airline, but even if you're like in premium economy or somehow gotten yourself upgraded to business class, it's still kind of tiring, probably.
I just, the act of traveling is, you know, taking up part of your brain, right? Regardless of how easy you're doing it on the traveling, it's taking up part of your brain. So you don't want to be playing something super deep and generally.
Especially, again, if we're talking like a longer haul journey, and you've gotten to something that I actually wrote down here because it was a revelation that took way too long to get to, because I think it was only a year ago that I came across it, which is, because for the longest time, the idea is like, you know, I'm going to have to be in a plane for like 10, 12, 14 hours. This is not something to look forward to, even if I'm like on a Qantas flight instead of a Jetstar or whatever. I'll buy myself a new handheld whatever as a thing to look forward to. And it never fucking works. I've like kind of come to discovery, like, it needs to be cozy already. You need to start playing that thing the day before. You need to find the groove with the game before you start playing it. You cannot sink into anything on a flight very well.
No, it does. It requires that brain power that's just not there. I'd imagine seasoned travelers may be a bit better, like those people that travel every week. But yeah, for most people, the act of traveling is out of routine, so their brain isn't working as it normally is, and that means you're not thinking as you normally are. So, yeah, I think that comfort game where it's simple, it provides simple joys that are repetitive, but, you know, tight gameplay is still important, don't get me wrong, but the repetitiveness of things that, you know, if you were sitting down on your couch for 5 hours would get to
like
you.
Routine is comfortable, I think, at that point. It's like,
yeah,
like Final Fantasy 13 is going to be fantastic if you're playing on an airplane.
I don't know that I've tried it. I don't get to push it that far, right? But yeah, you know what I mean? Like these games that I've been on the road playing, I'm having a blast with, even though I know as a critic, as someone that writes video games reviews, there's so many things I could pull apart in them. But in this particular instance, in this particular way, these games have found their mark.
Well, I mean, it's a very specific need that they're serving there as well. But like, I really do stand by this discovery. It's like, if you bought a new game for a flight, play it the day before you get on. Like, it actually just cracking that surface is so much harder once you're already in the air.
Learning new things is hard.
Yeah, and yeah, obviously doing that on a flight, never the best of
I guess
ideas.
If it's just like if you know it's the fifth Halo game that you've played and you're going through, then you could probably sell the new one. But
yeah. And I've been a lot in the car because my wife likes to drive, so which is fine by me. I sit and play games.
Yeah.
you know. so you know,
let her choose the music. You can.
And the biggest problem being, I think, with portable gaming now is there's so many games that require internet. Like,
yeah.
Yeah, I forgot. I had a moment where I couldn't play any of my Epic games in my ROG Ally because I was offline and I hadn't set something up properly. And I was like, well, this is okay. I'll get home later tonight and I can fix it up. But if I had gotten to the airport and I'd gotten on a plane and I was like halfway through something, I was like, fuck. Like, I guess I could pay for whatever shitty internet the plane has, like half an hour. But also, I explicitly do not want internet on the airplane. Like, I know, like, the small pleasures is I have an excuse to turn that shit off. I don't want people to be able to expect me to look at my phone.
Yeah. And during the requirement for games that are so clearly not required for the internet to have internet is stupid.
Yep.
It's 100, fucking 110. Stupid. And it's one of the biggest bugbears I have with all gaming at the moment is I want to play Marvel's Midnight Suns. Perfect handheld game, by the way. But it requires 2K's stupid fucking internet connection. If you don't connect to it once every 6 weeks, you've got to reconnect to it. So, you know, the time I want to play it.
It's a surprise. It's like, I'm going to dig back into this thing that I was enjoying. I've got 10 hours in the plane ahead of me. Shit.
Yeah. It's fucking dumb. Ugh.
Thanks, Don Matrick.
Yeah.
Don't know if it's entirely his fault. We're going to blame
him. So stupid. And I get it. There's internet games. Absolutely. If you want to play Destiny, you need the internet. If you want to play multiplayer, you need the internet. To play a turn-based strategy game that's single player, you do not need the fucking internet. But anyway, sorry. Bit ranty.
No, that's a good rant.
I mean, it's valid. Like I said, like I think it was actually the entire Epic launcher just decided that nope.
Yeah. With most of the launches, I understand they want you to check in on a regular basis because of piracy and all that, which I don't have a problem with. And generally now I'm in a habit before I go on a trip of just literally logging on to everything just once to make sure. But it's those odd games. Like, I get the launches. The games, however, I do not get. There's no excuse there. Just fuck off. Seriously, fuck off.
Oh, we've unlocked Angry Matt.
Yeah.
All right, yeah, it changes a little bit.
It happened to me the other day. That's why it's fresh. I really wanted to play Midnight Suns.
I do have that.
Yeah, play it. It's fucking great. I love that game
again,
so much.
I have this gigantic backlog of stuff. Like, it's weird, though, because that cross-compatibility where having a handheld PC does kind of have a Switch-ish effect, except there's two devices.
Yeah,
like your main gaming rig and the handheld is kind of affecting what games I now have got like on my Steam wish list a little bit because I'm like, oh, is this going to be? Because again, I know I have a travel coming up. Hopefully, the second half might.
And that rant of mine and the cloud saves and things like that is one of the reasons I have recently spent significantly more money and time on GOG because the DRM free games, and they don't require internet connections to run them. So that's part
that
of the GOG deal.
That is probably a worthwhile consideration.
It really is. So if you've got an old game, or, you know, not even an old game, GOG has new games, but if they're on there, they don't need an internet connection. So
part of
it's
the, yeah.
something to keep in mind.
It is, except I had a pang of nostalgia, and this is not GOG's fault. I had a pang of nostalgia again beginning this year because I was cleaning out all my stuff before I came back home. It's like, I want to play Gabriel Knight 3, which is a very unique scenario game that's been much maligned on the internet for a stupid get hair puzzle. And I mean, that puzzle was very stupid. There is an interesting story that may be one day, but we'll publish about why that puzzle is not supposed to be there, but it was anyway. It's like, you know, I just want to play this again. Maybe I'll play it all the way through. Maybe it'll catch me. Maybe I just want to play the first. Now,
first bit.
That game just expects you to have a CD, even if you buy it through GOG or Steam. It turns out I have it on both. And the only way around it is to, like, at this point, to, like, put a dummy disc into your disc drive. But guess how many people have disc drives in their computers at all these days?
Yeah.
The irony is I actually do have the discs. Like, I was like, you know, this game is weirdly special uniquely to me, so I bought it back with me. But obviously I can't put the discs in my current PC. I mean, I could open up the slide and jam it in there with a fan, but it was too very... to get to the last part of this, which is the whole, you know, either in a hotel room for an extended period of time or you're visiting relatives. There's a whole other different mental space, and I was talking to, I think it was off air, like, maybe I should buy a dock for the LI just to see what can go there.
I found this is where my Switch gets, like, I generally use I'm a PC guy at heart, right? So it's no shock that I use the PC handheld. But my Switch too, if I'm going to mum and dad's for a week or you know, my in-laws for a week, Switch 2 is what I take because of two things. It's the sort of thing that I can keep people happy with. You know, like if I'm playing a Switch, I can invite people to play Mario Kart with me or I can invite them to play whatever. It's
that
the
desktop
sort of
mode is underrated, man.
Yeah. So, you know,
tabletop mode, I guess.
Tabletop mode. So, you know, even the dock itself is very minimal. It's a USB-C power bank, it's a dock, and a HDMI cord, and you can plug it in any TV.
Yeah,
so there's
I've got
no
a travel
commitment.
Dock now, and like, it's just a power cable. Like, is any travel adapter that is of decent quality and
we'll run
an HDMI cable.
So and that's the good thing about that. And you know, and it's the sort of thing even mum and dad, like, they'll, I'll try and drive in Mario Kart. It'll be funny because they'll be terrible and they'll play with the grandkids and you know, that sort of thing. It's more of a communal sort of thing, so I don't feel
and
so bad. PC gaming's not like that.
Yeah, as much as we don't necessarily like the Joy-Cons.
Yeah.
Actually, my wife left her earphones behind. No, did she accidentally put them in a check-in or whatever? We had a short flight recently. It was like 4 hours. Mm. And so the entire flight, I mean, I wanted to play Octopath Traveler, but because I remembered mine, but she didn't. And, you know, this is a budget flight, didn't have a screen in the back of a TV or anything for her. So we ended up playing Golf Story.
Yep.
Just kind of set it up
on the table.
On the tray.
Mm-hmm.
Gave it ridiculously big holes. Because why would you not? Like, the game is not a very serious sim in the first place, and also on an airplane. And no, the Rogue Ally would not have been very helpful for that anyway. But also, as I have complained about earlier, playing like Golf Story for whatever fucking reason makes each player have their own controller. So we did, instead of like passing the things back and forth, we both had to have a sideways little Joy-Con, which is super comfortable. But also, I mean, I could play with my nephew and niece. Like, we just play Mario Kart. And it's not the best way to play Mario Kart, but it would, again, not be possible. Even if I bought a ROG Ally dock, I would still have to carry a controller with me, which would be a nicer controller than the Joy-Cons, but it is an extra thing with normal bits that could get damaged, and it's like,
I would much, much rather carry the Switch dock than any other console or even Ally dock to a family's place or to, you know, somewhere I'm staying extended time with others, just because of the nature of the Switch itself.
It's just less intimidating for people. Although if you are traveling, I guess, solo for whatever reason, it could be work or whatever, then that changes the equation again.
Yeah. Generally,
also,
if I'm staying somewhere a long time, it's family.
No, that's why I think I said going home and visiting.
Yeah.
But also the other like factor that comes into there then is there's suddenly the best game, very, very bad habit for sleep hygiene, but like the best game to kick back in bed with.
Oh, yeah.
I actually
okay.
think the turn-based RPGs start to shine here as well.
I am a bit of an XCOM guy in bed. I have been for a while.
Turn-based is probably...
Yeah, turn-based is good.
Like when you start to get sleepy, you can just kind of like wind down a bit more easily.
Yep. It's not requiring any sort of lightning reflexes, so your brain doesn't have to be fully engaged
a little bit because it's a strategy game.
But it's not like, worried about getting timings right or anything like that. You know, anything with quick time events is out. I notice that when I'm getting tired, even reviewing games, that's all right. I'm missing the quick time events. It's time to go to fucking bed. You know,
especially if you're playing on your handheld PC.
Yeah.
Anything that has save points, I imagine, also has to be out.
Yeah.
Unless it's a Steam Deck, in which case I understand that actually does sleep properly.
Yeah. Even then, it has issues with sleep. Like, the handheld PCs haven't nailed that sleep like the Switch has,
actually did make me really appreciate the Switch 2 is excellent like that. Like, any distraction can come up and you can just like, boop, I'll come back to that later, and it will always work. Actually, there's a weird music bug with Saints Row, but it still works. You just get in and out of a car and you fix it.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think that turn-based style works. Anything...
Although I've just realized we've gotten through most of this without talking about Hades, which I feel like is one of the quintessential...
Yeah.
Definitely on that flight.
Yeah.
Where I was ended up playing Golf Story, like, two rows ahead of me off to the other side, the guy had busted out his Steam Deck and was playing Hades 2. And I kind of wanted, and if I wasn't playing Golf Story, I think I was going to play Hades 2 as well, just because I wanted to like try and get an ocular difference between this, like a very superficial, like how much do I get anything from the resolution boost on the Switch 2 screen? Because the one thing I really do envy about, I wish was different on the ROG Ally, is I wish it had a lower resolution but OLED screen.
OLED screen, yeah. Roguelikes, I think, fall into that almost like repetitive category of
some of the runs in Hades get pretty long though. Like,
they do. Generally, they save each screen though from memory with
they
Hades.
Do like that? Yeah, Hades definitely every area.
Every area is a save. So even if for whatever reason it doesn't come
it's
out,
it's not
of
a
sleep,
great bed game though because it's too stimulating.
It's too much reaction based and things like that. But yeah, they,
I feel like it's
I
like a
Roguelikes,
good beginning of the flight. A good beginning of the flight genre.
I think those roguelikes in general fall into that, kind of like the Mafia trees and the Saints Rows and that repetitive, repeating the same task over and over again. Obviously, roguelikes.
Mentally, it helps that you're supposed to fail as well. Yeah. Like, it's a big deal if you don't. So, like, the frustration doesn't have to build because unless you're hyper-competitive and don't understand how it works.
Yeah.
Like, it's a given. It's like, oh, well, I died. That was going to happen at some point anyway. Like,
Yep. Yeah, they make for a great travel game because of that. Their very nature, I think. And you can run. You can do runs. And even if they're a long run, Dead Cells is the same. Like, a good Dead Cells runs at least an hour and a half.
At least 20 minutes, probably longer than that.
Well, I think to go to...
Beginning I haven't played Dead Cells in a while.
It'd be at least an hour, I reckon, to do beginning to end in the best way possible.
Dead Cells does predate like regular PC gaming. Like that was very much a Switch. There's a Switch game in my head just because. Yeah. I guess that does like say something about like it was out in PC, it was out in PlayStation, but I definitely just see Dead Cells and I think Switch like just immediately.
It was great portable because.
It was
really good portable.
It was one, I actually did play that in commutes, come to think of it. A lot of the time I just wouldn't bother getting my Switch out. I think even for like Mario Odyssey, I just didn't really bother if I was like going 15, 20 minutes to work, but Dead Cells.
Yep.
It's like, if I could get a seat on that train, even if it was only for like 10 minutes. And keep in mind, this is when Nintendo had, for whatever reason, was keeping Bluetooth locked. So I had to like pull out a wire and like plug in headphones as well.
Yep. But even then, a lot of those quick roguelikes, if you were stuck without sound, it's not ideal, but it's not the end of the world. You know, because
Dead Cells is pretty good, though.
It is good. But yeah.
And my gosh, I don't think I would play Hades without sound. I think I would find that offensive. Not because, like, it would be impossible, but because the audio in that game,
yeah,
like the music, the voice acting, everything is, like, so good.
Yeah.
Which I guess we would expect considering the pedigree of
that studio. Like, they yeah, nailed assuming, those like, presentation aspects way back with Bastion. So, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Bastion yeah. soundtrack is still like just an old timer. Yeah. And the voice acting.
The voice well, acting in Bastion's, yep. Yeah. The narrator in that game is next level.
Excellent
yeah.
creative solution there. I remember yeah. when I like had it explained to well, not explained to me, like it was Daniel Staines. And I don't think he knows this for a fact, but it made sense as like some clever indie thinking resulting in like a cool idea, which is like they probably didn't have the budget for multiple voice actors.
Yeah, yeah. And just have a narrator.
What if we hire one really good guy
yep.
and find a way to do that? And that narration was fucking awesome, man.
Yep.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yep. All right,
Rob, since I think Hugh and I have like talked over you quite a bit this episode, do you have any particular like older school things? We've really been like DS and forward in a lot of our focus.
Yeah, see, it's kind of hard because like... for example, the Atari Lynx catalog is like very short form arcade gaming. So it's the kind of stuff where it's like if you're going to be on a flight, even if you have power to drive it,
batteries, because
a jillion batteries. Yes.
Yeah.
Like you're not going to like, I could see myself on a flight playing like a bunch of hard driving or a bunch of like, or some of the other stuff for that. And I think a lot of the same about the original Game Boy. Maybe the Game Boy Color, like I know people are going to go for Pokemon or whatever. Metal Gear Solid or on Game Boy Color.
I think Fire Emblem would have been a big one. But...
Fire Emblem, yes. Tactics Ogre, which was on GBA. I don't know. Yeah.
The Donkey Kong games Fire Emblem. Were pretty...
Yeah, Mario vs. Donkey Kong, yeah.
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 It was a weird thing, because we take for granted backlit screens now, but even the first Game Boy Advance did not have one of those.
No. I remember that pain well. Like, I know some people decry it, but I think Metroid Fusion tweaked up the Metroid formula really well to work on a portable system by having more frequent save spots so you could get to a save point, save... and power down.
I say Metroid Prime, that remaster, was a really mixed bag as a portable game. Because on one hand, the slow exploration worked really well, but if you did get stuck, and again, your mind's a little bit more foggy in an airplane, like you really were just fucking stuck.
Yeah. Prime, like, that was an amazing bit of work, but not really the kind of game you want to play on the go, I would agree.
I think if it was like an easier alternative to Metroid Prime would probably actually work. Like a more straightforward, like, I almost want to say linear, but at this point it's not Metroid anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe that's what they were trying to go for with 4, but you got more 4 experience.
4, I would say, it actually like at its best as a travel game. It's just, it's also one of the more disappointing games I've played in the last few years. Actually, I will say, once you're into it, the new Zelda's work very well like that, because you can you can choose to ignore the main quests, and like that's when just like they open up, set yourself, I'm just going to collect all this shit, or I'm just going to go over here and see what happens, because your time doesn't matter as much at this point. It's not like I want to accomplish something before lunch, it's like I want to make the time go away until the meal service starts.
That just made me think of another genre that works really well, and that's the Musou games. They are just
smash
the shit out of shit. Like I played Hyrule Warriors recently. That's what made me think of it. The new one.
I will say that's perfect. Probably one genre where you could start a new one of those in the
planet, you could
probably.
Because it's not complicated. Let's face it. But you know there is satisfaction to be had for killing 4,000 enemies in one level. So that works really well handheld. So all the Warriors games, they're really good.
Yeah, I think we've probably covered like quite a lot there.
Yeah, I have to admit, I'm sort of drawing a blank because I just think I think a lot of the stuff that works. Like, I couldn't imagine playing like some of the other things I've been like, you know, another example, like going back to PSP, was like the PSP Ace Combats were really cool.
Yeah. Well,
at least the first one was really cool, but it's not quite, some of those missions could go on a bit, not quite as compact as it'd be perfect for like start and stop.
Even if you can, is, you
know, like a lot of big AAA stuff is not a problem. Handheld.
Yeah.
Like The Witcher works on Steam Deck. It works on ROG, but it's not great playing The Witcher
because it's
a game you have to sink into. You've got to kind of, you know, work yourself into that. That
maybe
that
if you do have
work.
A first class ticket, but
yeah. You know, but it's not the sort of game that you can just pick up and go.
Yeah.
I have noticed that, like, even as a retro thing, a lot of the bigger budget stuff just doesn't seem to come up, even for like, if you're like visiting, because like, I mean, we talked about like PS3 era stuff, and like, I'm thinking, like I mentioned, Rise of the Tomb Raider,
yep,
which is very much AAA of its era and still kind of holds up as that. But I think if battery concern wasn't an issue, I wouldn't
be playing
again
that
if
game,
I was
honest.
At the hotel, yep. I would probably get back into it, but during the transit,
no,
yeah,
really,
maybe like a boomer shooter,
something like that.
But at that point, that's.
If your thumbsticks held up, that'd be the big one.
Yes.
That's the thing that's like where I'm concerned about. If I give myself drift on this thing, then...
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, some games are designed for the biggest screen you can find, and I think Rise of the Tomb Raider is absolutely one of those. And some games work on a range, you know, and it's just... It's finding those games that you like for those small screens.
I found Rise of the Tomb Raider actually works pretty well still on the smaller screen when my wife wants me next to her in front of the TV instead of at my computer. But the idea of playing it on the go just kind of...
Yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely not a...
Yeah.
Just like...
Yeah,
no,
I'm just...
Like a...
Yeah.
I guess we did forget probably the most obvious in hindsight, which is your Phoenix Wrights and your Danganronpa's.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
you're basically your books, effectively, is what I'm trying
your
to say.
Your visual novels, yeah, yeah.
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 But,
and Telltale stuff and things like that would work really well.
You get a little
well.
Old Scum VM going and get some, you know, LucasArts or Sierra stuff from GOG.
Yeah, but you'd need
if it's a mouse
and a
like,
and,
it would
yeah.
make sense.
Yeah.
Like, again, if you've got a laptop with you and you're, like, staying somewhere, then that, but on the airplane, that'd be a bit iffy.
Anything with a controller support, sir.
Although Broken Sword 3, pretty good. Maybe Grim Fandango. I guess there are some.
Grim Fandango's got controller support, yeah.
Grim Fandango's really hard now. If you don't remember how to play that game or don't have access to, like, a play guide or something, that would really frustrate you. Like, there is some pretty mean stuff in some of those old adventure games.
Yeah, oh yeah, but the newest Monkey Island fully controller support. So
yeah,
something like that.
That would be good, and that's got the integrated hint systems for when you get stuck, like Thimbleweed. Yeah.
That game was actually pretty good.
Yeah.
All right, you know, let's end this because I like the idea that we're going to end this talking about
Monkey Island
classic adventure games. Yeah. we started with Rum. We ended with Grog.
Yep, sounds good. There's a sweet synergy to the whole thing.
Yeah. Maybe we look up a grog recipe I can drink again the day this goes live, actually. on that note, Hugh, so thank you very much for coming back again. Do we have anything coming up of note?
We do, actually. I could talk about it. I'll have a Forza Horizon 6 preview when this goes live. So that'll be up. We've got a few other reviews in the works. It's a bit of a lull in the big releases at the moment, so it's been a really good time to get in and do some smaller stuff, which we're having fun with. We're also working on some changes over at Player 2, which Tim and Rob don't know about yet.
Wait, what?
Yeah. So there will be changes coming, we hope, that people will like. So keep an eye out for those as we gradually move to a new kind of format, if a few things. So, yeah.
Format, okay. Well, it just got way bigger.
Mm.
All right, Rob, how nervous are you?
Oh, potentially. But, you know, who knows? We'll see what happens when that gets rolled out.
Mm.
In the meantime, though, what have you got? What have you got coming?
So I just had the review for Gumball in Trick or Treat Land go out like a week or so ago from when we're recording this.
Yep.
I'm currently working on Boulder Dash 40th Anniversary now, which is the other one of the double load that I'm working through. Hopefully, I don't think that's going to be a massive one to do, despite having
it's Boulder Dash.
So it's Boulder Dash. it's simple enough to just see how all the thing works. I don't have to go through all 300 odd levels that it has in there, which is actually pretty cool for longevity. And that'll be going out. Well, hopefully I'll get a write up of that. Probably will be out probably a week or so after we go live with this episode. So see how we go.
I saw on Blue Sky you mentioning something about video editing. Do you have a scan lines coming up?
I'm trying to get it out the door to supporters. It'll be probably a week or so after this episode goes out. I'm looking at an old game called Crystals of Zong, which is a weird little maze adventure thing from the games I don't need to play for hours to get time to actually do a decent write-up of pile, which is just where life is at for me at the moment. Yeah. I have a bunch of things I want to look at, but I just don't have time to play anything decent or do multi-format to get a video together, at least for the next few months.
That's life, and I believe it is Rob Cap.
Yeah, Rob Cap on Blue Sky.
And wait, I forgot to ask you, Huso. You just Huso? Did you get? Or are you stuck with Huso 81?
No, Huso, still Huso. I got rid of Huso 81 when Trump became the Twitter's number one content provider. Damn. So,
or his sycophants.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have anything new coming up soon. I've been chasing down my own reviews.
Yeah, shit editors, that's... What a wanker. He doesn't get his review goes through. Like,
turns out it's not very hard to send an email.
Despite all the AI people telling you to use AI.
Yeah.
It's not that hard to write an email.
It turns out, like, just Google said game, find email address, say, hey, this is me. Can I get on the review list of your game? I think it looks cool. I liked your last one. Turns out they're pretty happy to talk to you.
Yeah.
Hopefully it will be awesome. We'll keep mum about that, though, because I have no idea like what the conditions of virtual set are. You are once the keys start going out. But until then, I'm just going to, you know, just stick around and play whatever. My day job will have started again just as this episode goes live. So, like, the period where I could have done all the reviews was a period where none of them were coming through.
Yeah.
Or at least, like, yeah, pretty much. I mean, whatever. I got Screamer written.
Yes, you did. You got that Screamer.
Yeah, I did. And it was impossibly difficult.
I just come through.
I did update recently.